Earth Eats is a production of WFIU and Indiana Public Media.
Welcome to Earth Eats, a show of real food and green living. I'm Annie Corrigan.
There is no shortage of chicken tenders in the world. Here, it's good quality food. This is your home, and they deserve that.
Not that there's anything wrong with chicken tenders. It's just when Chef Jackie Howard makes them for the women of Alpha Z Delta Sorority, she makes them from scratch, using as many local ingredients as possible. Institutional cooking never tasted so good. From a sorority to a co-op, two women tell us about making food decisions as a group. We visit Susan Wellsand's chili pepper farm, which is powered by solar panels, then kale salad for your health, and strawberry shortcake for fun with Chef Daniel Orr. Stories from our news reporters brought to us by Luann Johnson.
Dry fields and dying citrus trees in California mean produce prices are rising and farmhands are out of work. As a result, some produce that is typically grown in California may need to be imported as farmers brace themselves for the end of the rainy season and the loss of valuable citrus and nut trees. Higher prices are on their way within the next few months, and even if the drought were to end tomorrow, relief wouldn't be felt for some time. California grows most of the nation's almonds, apricots, olives, pistachios, and prunes. Oliver Winery may have lost up to two-thirds of its grape crop this year because of the harsh winter. The winery has been conducting tests at its Creek Bend Vineyard in southern Indiana to estimate the extent of the damage. But they won't know exactly how much damage has been done until the grapevines start budding. Oliver Winery President Bill Oliver says it wasn't the length of the winter that harmed the plants, but the extreme cold snaps. Oliver Winery imports grapes from other states, so along with last year's harvest, they should have enough inventory for this year. But the damage could reduce the amount of wine they can make from local grapes in the next year or two. Oliver seems to be taking it all in stride, saying, "Risk is just part of farming." 18 to 33-year-olds hold about $1.3 trillion of spending power, according to a study by RBC Capital Markets. That spending power has the ability to make or break restaurants, and restaurants are watching trends with trepidation. Over the past 7 years, millennials have slowed restaurant spending by 21%. What seems to draw millennials to restaurants is high-quality food. Places like Panera and Chipotle lead with fresh ingredients and made-to-order dishes in a fast, casual environment. Tech-savvy stores are also leading the curve. Starbucks has a smartphone app that allows customers to pay through the app. Meanwhile, traditional fast food spots like McDonald's are suffering. Despite attempts to court younger customers with healthier items like yogurt, salad, and soups, McDonald's has posted a fifth consecutive month of declining profits. And Vermont is one step closer to being the first state to require labeling for GMO foods. The bill would require mandatory labeling of foods made with genetically modified organisms. It received final approval from the State House this week. The Vermont Senate approved it last week, 28-2. It's now headed to Governor Peter Shumlin's desk for his signature. Maine and Connecticut passed GMO labeling bills recently, but those bills require other states to pass similar legislation before they can be enacted. Vermont's version contains no such trigger clause. We post stories like these all week on our Twitter feed. Connect with us at Earth Eats.
And our website is eartheats.org, and that's the place to find links to these stories. Luann Johnson with our food news. We appreciate it.
You got it.
Ecologists in Nebraska are trying to find out what the Great Plains looked like when homesteaders settled on them in the 19th century. To do that, they're working with a team of archaeologists and historians. They're dissecting a sod house, a house built out of brick cut from dirt. From Nebraska, Jackie Sojico reports for Harvest Public Media.
Larry Estes has had a sod house in his backyard as long as he can remember. He never really thought anything about it until a repairman pointed it out.
From there on, it just mushroomed. And I can't understand in my own mind why it's important. But as many people were here, it must be.
It's important because for a team of scientists from Lincoln, Nebraska, the sod house represents a snapshot of prairie life from more than a century ago. Late last fall, Estes and a few members of the Custer County Historical Society separated one wall from the rest of the house. The whole thing weighed almost 2 tons. The scientists want to take the wall back to the University of Nebraska-Lincoln to dissect it, take it apart, and analyze everything inside it in a kind of autopsy. Luann Wansnyder is a professor of archaeology at UNL and one member of the autopsy team. She wants to know if the sod house can tell a more detailed story about homesteaders in Nebraska. She says we know some things about the turn of the century, but there's a lot we don't know, too.
It's a laboratory that we can kind of look to see over the course of 100 years what happened as people dealt with changing economic situations and as droughts came and affected them.
It could help current farmers on the plains cope with drought and deal with climate change in the future. The wall sits in storage on UNL's East Campus for most of the winter. In March, Dave Wedeen, a grasslands ecologist at UNL's School of Natural Resources, and the other researchers start the autopsy.
That looks
like the easiest corner to start with.
I think so.
Right?
First, they have to take the wall apart. Wedeen inserts a wide trowel between two layers of brick. David Murphy, an architectural historian at the Nebraska State Historical Society, looks on.
Has it been hard pulling the bricks apart?
No, because you can kind of see it jostled around enough in transit. The seal broke a little bit. I've been using these wide trowels to make sure we don't break it. It just seems to fall right off.
Wedeen says even though the wall comes apart pretty easily, the bricks themselves are really sturdy.
They're amazing, you know, so this is about... 3 to 4 inches thick, hard as a brick, and you can still see roots sticking all through it that hold it together.
Those are roots from the prairie grasses that were growing in the dirt before that dirt became building material. The sod is a kind of time capsule from 100 years ago. Like settler life, we have some idea of what the prairie was like at that time, but Wedeen wants to know more.
Lewis and Clark made notes about the prairie, but they weren't quantitative data. They weren't how much of this species, how much of that species. And they certainly didn't measure how much soil organic matter, what percent carbon the soils had back then when they went through.
Wedeen will use modern techniques to analyze the sod bricks to get the same kind of information we have about the prairie today. Those details might sound trivial, but they can help scientists see how much or how little the prairie has changed in the past century. That could help conservationists define clearer goals for preserving grasslands. Wedeen says we know what grasses grew a century ago, but not which ones were dominant or how they affected soil fertility and organic matter.
We literally have preserved a natural prairie, and it's just sitting in my hand as a block of sod. That's not our goal for our landscape. It's important to know the history because it informs what we choose now as our priorities.
Because there's so much dirt, the wall is also a chance to just try things. Wedeen and the other scientists on the team can be creative with their experiments.
We have chunks of this that we've broken up and put in a greenhouse flat, and we're watering it to see if anything will germinate. The science tells us that 99.9% of seeds are never going to make it 100 years. I don't know if that revolutionized science in any way, but it'd be really neat.
Right, this is like 43.
That's 43?
Okay. And then this is 62.
Back at the service shed at UNL, Wedeen and Murphy take measurements of the huge brick they just removed. Wansnyder notes where on the wall this brick came from, so later they'll be able to match it to their data. Wedeen divides the brick up into squares for each lab.
There you go. It's like cutting up a Dairy Queen ice cream cake.
What piece do you want?
The autopsy is going to take a long time. The team still has to peel apart the rest of the bricks and divide them up among the labs doing analyses. And there's still more than half the wall to go through. It will be a while before they get any results. But even though the autopsy is still in its early stages, Wedeen says it's already producing something. Collaboration between different kinds of scientists.
I've never actually worked on the same soil samples with an archaeologist and a historian. And even some of my colleagues, my entomologist friends and stuff, I've never actually worked with them on the same sample in the same place. The interdisciplinary nature of the project, that's what science should be.
So do you have a layer? Do you have a piece from layer 3 yet?
No.
No.
These findings may only apply to this one specific area of the prairie and to this one specific sod house. but their research could be part of a bigger collaboration. Their techniques and data could be used by other scientists to study more sod houses and help us get a better picture of our past all over the Midwest. For Harvest Public Media, I'm Jackie Sujigo.
Harvest Public Media is a reporting collaboration focused on issues of food, fuel, and field. More stories like this one at harvestpublicmedia.org. We were inspired by Earth Day this past week to dig back in our archives and feature an especially green grower, the chili woman, Susan Wellsand. Her two greenhouses are chock full of chili plants this time of year, some 2,000 different varieties that she sells to customers all over the country. She showed me around on an overcast and slightly chilly day last year. The centerpiece of her farm is the massive 5.2 kilowatt array of solar panels. Her property had been heavily wooded until a tornado came through in May 2011 and uprooted several large trees.
I've never seen this guy back here. This was real shocking. And these were like big old growth trees here that kind of disappeared. And also I had trees all the way along there that went away, and then trees down this side. So I lost like trees on three sides.
With the help of a tax credit for small businesses and a lot of penny pitching, she was able to install the solar panels and rewire the greenhouses in late 2012. The chili plants need temperatures around 85, 90 degrees, so she's running heat almost constantly on days like this.
You can conserve in your personal life, but for your business, that's not really an option. You need power to run a business. My little greenhouse.
We peer through the windows to see thousands and thousands of germinating seeds.
And I don't let anyone go in here except the greenhouse inspector. But
you can take a peek. Shipping plants is such a highly regulated activity that she's fanatical about keeping contamination out of her greenhouses. She pulls out her cell phone to check the levels from the solar panels.
You can kind of see even today, even though it's a cloudy day, I'm like at half power. So there's enough sun breaking through the cloud cover. And then if we go back to February,
whoa,
you can see the difference. See those sunny days?
30K. And that's enough to power, you said, this greenhouse and that one over there?
It should be. It should be more than enough. I said this will be the year we find out. You can just see it, just a little bit of sun came out. I bet they'll spike right up.
While she can sit back and let the sun power her farm, that's about the only aspect of her business that is hands-off. As she sows the 2,000 varieties of chili plants, she takes meticulous notes to keep track of everything once the orders start coming in. Agricultural regulations require that she ship the plants in May and June only, so she's preparing for a busy couple of months.
If I'm selling a lot of something I didn't expect, I say, oh, I better go. So somewhere like I'll be sowing more burning bush, because that hasn't sold very well in the last couple of years. And every order, people want a burning bush plant. So I'm like, okay. If I didn't have to keep track of all this, it would go a lot faster. And if I only grew a few varieties, it would be so easy. You know, there's a reason that there's not a lot of people doing this.
Wellsand's wish for spring?
I'm hoping for more sun.
You are.
Any sunny day is a good day.
See photos of the chili woman, Susan Wellsand, and her impressive solar panels on our website, eartheats.org.
I can see clearly now the rain has gone. I can see all obstacles in my way. Gone are the dark clouds that had me.
Maddie Hayford has never actually been in the kitchen of her sorority, Alpha Zi Delta. She eats 2 to 3 meals here every day, but like most students at Indiana University, she eats and runs. But even with her busy schedule, she has developed relationships with Chef Jackie Howard and her staff.
I had the cranberry, or was it cranberry cobbler we had the other night?
Mixed berry cobbler with the local berries, blackberries, strawberries, and blueberries.
That did really phenomenal. I liked that. That got my sweet tooth.
Do you ever grab Jackie and say, I would really love this particular dish?
I'm trying to think.
In the morning.
Right, mm-hmm. That's right. Yeah, we get eggs every morning. And yeah, the local eggs was definitely a thing for me.
That's something that you wanted?
Yes.
Hayford is studying to be a health fitness specialist, so she's especially interested in healthy food options, local if possible. Howard brings that same philosophy to her cooking. Hayford says Howard is their wild card during recruitment, that time of year when freshmen and sophomores are trying to decide which sorority to join. This isn't the time for good-for-you food. Howard goes for flashy.
Let's see, this year we did vanilla bean marshmallows, strawberry swirl cheesecake, which we used the Dillman Farm strawberry jam for that. Oh, we did rose meringue cookies, pink and white pinwheel sugar cookies, and then we did the French vanilla soda in the champagne glasses.
It really lets Alpha Z Delta shine because the last round is a more intimate round, and we have desserts, and so they get to taste the lovely food that Jackie gets to cook for us every day, and so I think it probably ropes them in a little bit.
Howard says institutional cooking gets a bad rap, but she really has put her stamp on this kitchen. She works with area farmers to bring in as much local and organic produce as possible, which is unique for the IU campus. She serves the same 100 women every day, so she gets to know their tastes. Over time, she's seen their food preferences change.
When I first started here like 5 years ago, it was just, I want plain chicken breast and cottage cheese because that's what my mom said is healthy. But now, girls line up for kale salad. And that's incredible. It's incredible to see. And they're so pumped about it and freaking out on Facebook. Oh my God, it's kale salad night. Like, it's so exciting.
We visited her in the kitchen as she was whipping up a strawberry dessert.
So this is a local strawberry bread pudding. We have a brown sugar streusel on top. And it has local strawberry sauce with a local honey and local goat. Should I just like say it all and then it's all local? The bread is local. It's all local.
The thing that's immediately coming to my mind right now is just dollar signs, dollar signs, yes. Dollar signs. Yes. How expensive is it to source all this great stuff locally?
That's why it's so important that we reuse and repurpose and pay really great attention to the things that we have in the kitchen, and that's how we save those dollars.
Like the bread for this recipe is a few days old, so she's giving it new life in the dessert. She keeps all her veggie scraps in the walk-in for making vegetable stock. Soon, her farmers will be able to supply her with gorgeous, fresh veggies. But think about the school year. Most of the students will be long gone by early June.
And that's one of the challenges. It's one of the challenges of local produce in the winter when I'm receiving the same thing. That's what's available to me every week, and I have to turn it into something totally different because I can't make butternut squash pasta every night to use up a bunch of butternut squash.
So it's the same people, and you develop relationships with these people. You get to know what they like to eat, I assume.
Absolutely. That's one of my favorite things about the job. That's what draws me to it. That I know what Maddie loves, you know, like I know her egg order when she gets down here, and they know me. We're in their home, you know, this is their home, and it's so important that we create that environment for them, that they're able to have that interaction with us. You know, there is no shortage of chicken tenders in the world. Here, it's good quality food, and they deserve that.
Jackie Howard is the executive chef at Indiana University's Alpha Z Delta sorority. She gave us recipes for her strawberry bread pudding dessert and a French dip made with local ham. We'll put those on the website for your viewing and cooking pleasure, eartheats.org. Coming up, hands-on with kale.
Then you just get in there with your fingers and really work it. We're really going to massage it like it's got a big backache. And what that does is it tenderizes it and makes it easier to eat.
Two recipes inspired by the ladies of Alpha Z Delta, a kale salad that maybe, hopefully, they'll write about on their Facebook pages, and Daniel Orr's version of strawberry shortcake. Production support for Earth Eats comes from Blooming Foods. Fresh, local, organic food with delis at all three locations and a garden center on East 3rd Street. BloomingFoods.coop. Touchstone Wellness, providers of therapeutic massage and yoga instruction, offering a variety of healing massage styles and yoga levels. At the corner of Buick Cadillac Boulevard and Auto Mall Road, one block east of College Mall Road. Touchstone Wellness, massage and yoga. More at touchstonewellness.com. And Bloomington Hypnosis, with certified hypnotist and self-hypnosis instructor John Hunkler, helping clients relax into weight loss for health and fitness. Bloomington Hypnosis, 812-200-5005. Welcome back to Earth Eats. I'm Annie Corrigan. Chef Daniel Orr has three types of kale for this salad recipe: Tuscan, curly, and purple.
All right, so we're just going to cut this really, really thin. And that's really the most important part of this dish, because you're cutting it so thin that it's going to become tender when you massage it. Today we're going to use good olive oil. And this is the time where you pull out that expensive bottle of olive oil, you know, that $15 bottle, because you're using it raw, and that's how you're going to taste a good olive oil. A good pinch of freshly cracked black pepper, a good pinch of kosher salt, and then I'm going to chop up some mint, and that's going to give the salad a nice lively flavor. And again, you don't need to mince it up too fine. We want to have that mint kind of in every other bite, so not every bite tastes the same. We're going to add a little bit of lemon juice. And we're even going to take a little bit of that peel. You could take a vegetable peeler if you've got good knife skills. Just cut a little strip off there. And we're going to do what we call a brunoise. And a brunoise is a very fine dice. I'm going to add just a little bit of orange juice, fresh orange juice. Then you just get in there with your fingers and really work it. We're really going to massage it like it's got a big backache. And what that does is it tenderizes it and makes it easier to eat. And I'm going to give it a little taste. Now, I added just a little bit of salt. Again, greens are easy to oversalt, so you always can add a little more, but you can't take it out once you put it in there. So, I think you guys are going to love this.
Yeah, this was a goodie. Make this massaged kale salad for yourself. The recipe is at eartheats.org. It's certainly not the norm to have a trained chef preparing your meals when you're in college. Then when students move off campus, they're on their own for food, for the most part. And being on a fixed income means being smart about what you eat. Tori Martindale and Lucy Siliaks live in the Woodlandia co-op, so they share food decisions with several roommates. Once a week, they all take turns making dinner for the entire house. Lauren Glappa chatted with Tori and Lucy to find out how this all works.
So this is our leftover fridge. It's kind of a mess always, but you can see just like tons of Tupperware containers that have all the leftovers from dinner. So then we have our like canned bulk stuff.
So we like once a month we will kind of ask the house what we want for bulk items. We usually get like staples like baking goods, like flour and oats. Butter. We also just get whatever we want if we want special items. And the money that we pay for our rent goes toward that. So it's like a pooling of all of our money goes to all the food that we need for our house.
We also have something called Piazza. We don't always take advantage of this, but what it is it's a bulk produce buying. So that means that we will say what we want, and it can come in like cases and stuff like that. So we can get large quantities of like vegetables that way. We don't always do that because it means that it's not always going to be local, although they do have like organic options. We also buy a lot of food just at the regular grocery store. And then we also have a portion of our money that goes to a farmer's market.
What nights of the week do you guys cook?
I cook on Tuesday nights.
Monday?
How early do you start cooking, and what's just your process you normally go through?
Our standard time is at 5. You're kind of expected to be in the kitchen with your partner 5 shortly thereafter. and then dinner is served around 7. We try to shoot for that every time.
Yeah, so I'd say there's like kind of two approaches. The first approach is if you have something really special kind of planned, and that would be maybe if you like really planned it out in advance, you made sure that you had all of the ingredients for that. You might spend some of your own money to make sure that like you have special things. And that on like a daily basis is not usually what people do. Usually we instead look at like what ingredients we have and kind of go from there. So, but it's rare that we're going to have like every single ingredient that's in a recipe. So there's a lot of like substitution that happens and creativity. We try really hard, I think, to make choices that are good for our health and also sustainable like economically. So there's certain things that we don't buy because they're too expensive. So yeah, and those are all decisions that we talk about as a house.
Yeah, we have meetings sometimes where we talk about which items are important for us to have local, organic, from Piazza, in bulk, whatever, just to make sure everyone's kind of on the same page about, you know, where our money is going, because it's everyone sharing the same money sources, or like the same source of
food.
Yeah, so everyone, we try to please everyone because everyone's paying for it.
Thanks to Earth Eats' Lauren Glapa for that story. Jackie Howard showed us her recipe for strawberry shortcake in the first half of the show. Daniel Orr now has his version. He's chopping some young mint leaves, first off.
These are really perfumey. You know, they've been waiting underground all winter long. They're going to the disco when they come out. And when it's this young, you can even throw some of the stems in. It doesn't matter. They're tender. It's only when, you know, mint gets older and gets woody that you really need to worry about the stems. So I've got a nice dish of strawberries, probably about 3 to 4 cups of strawberries. I'm going to put a little bit of local maple syrup. This comes from Burton's Maple Camp. I'm going to add about a half a lemon's worth of juice. Now again, with desserts, a lot of times I'll add a pinch of salt and just a little pinch of freshly ground black pepper. We're going to toss this. Now you can let this macerate for 10 or 15 minutes, and it's only going to get better with a little bit of time. All right, so I've got these nice biscuits. They're warm from the oven. I'm going to just put a little bit of strawberries on because I want to top these with ice cream, and if I put the ice cream directly on the biscuit, it would melt too quickly. And then what I like to do is to take a little bit of yogurt, and that's going to cut down on the sweetness of the ice cream, and I just kind of drizzle that around the outside, and then decorate it with some more of those mint babies. Okay, and that's mint and maple strawberry shortcake.
You know, here's what I suggest. You make one of these strawberry shortcake recipes, give the other recipe to a friend, have them prepare that. You guys come together, have a taste test, maybe invite us. Perfect time of year for it. Find the recipes at eartheats.org. Thanks to everyone who helps make Earth Eats possible, including Aabon Binder, Chad Bouchard, Lauren Glapa, Jackie Howard, Luann Johnson, Liz Leslie, Daniel Orr, Susan Wellsand, and everyone at Harvest Public Media. Production support for Earth Eats comes from Blooming Foods, fresh, local, organic food with delis at all three locations and a garden center on East 3rd Street, bloomingfoods.coop. Touchstone Wellness, providers of therapeutic massage and yoga instruction, offering a variety of healing massage styles and yoga levels at the corner of Buick Cadillac Boulevard and Auto Mall Road, one block east of College Mall Road. Touchstone Wellness, massage and yoga. More at touchstonewellness.com. And Bloomington Hypnosis, with certified hypnotist and self-hypnosis instructor John Hunkler, helping clients relax into weight loss for health and fitness. Bloomington Hypnosis, 812-200-5005. Earth Eats is a production of WFIU and Indiana Public Media. Will Murphy, executive producer. Thanks for tuning in this week. Don't forget to subscribe to us on iTunes. I'm Annie Corrigan for Earth Eats.